Welcome to the Angle Podcast. I'm with my guy Scott here today, as always, the silver fox of the podcast. Today we have one of my favorite rock stars. This is somebody who knows how to party. This is someone who knows how to put together an event. This is a professor of none of the things I mentioned. She does a lot of work around civic innovation, civic tech. She's a professor and head of that School of Governance. There isn't much I can say about her. I mean, her CV and her resume is just that long. But anyhow, Prof. Gechi Karuru-Sibina, welcome to the Angle Podcast.
Thanks, Stanley. I'm really good. Thanks for having me. And do not call me the head of the Witt School of Governance before I get fired by my boss, who is the head of the Witt School of Governance.
Well, now you know I butchered that intro. Prof, please introduce yourself.
Thank you. So, quite correct. I helped to organize something called the Civic Tech Innovation Network. It's an African-wide network, and it's based at the Witt School of Governance, where we're hosted, but it was actually incubated at the Witt Journalism School, alongside the Journalism and Media Lab, the JAM Lab. But my portfolio at the Witt School of Governance really is around digital transformation. So we were the Tayrisha African Center of Excellence in Digital Governance. We try to focus on a range of issues around governing the digital transformation, but also questions of anticipation. So what's on the horizon? You know, so for now, everybody's talking AI, but technological change is constant, and there'll always be new things on the horizon. So Tayrisha is really about this idea of preparedness, but also doing the scholarship, doing the work to sort of get the country aware and engaged in the reality of technological change and how we govern for it. The civic tech piece is a really exciting piece because it's probably the one where we bring in other actors, not just the state and not just industry, but we begin to talk about a whole society of people who are on their cell phones, are digitally engaged, and themselves can do all sorts of things and themselves have governance questions.
Oof. There you go.
You see, that's the bit I left out. Anyhow, Prof, I'm interested in the definition of civic tech. Mm. Right, a lot of people, myself included, before I engaged with CTIN, tech was tech.
Yes,
right? If you are in the innovation space, you're in the innovation space. But what is this branch of tech called civic tech?
Yeah, and it's always a big question, partly because, and I've had debates with my fellow academics about this, academics like things to be conceptually clear before they believe they're a thing. And so I often say to them, well, here's a thing that's happening, whether or not you have a definition for it yet. So I think the practice has gone ahead of the theorization. So civic tech, if I was to use it in very simple terms, we call it tech for public good. And generally, we mean digital tech for public good, because obviously there are people who are doing tech around water systems or around solar or green tech, exactly. Right. So there's a whole range of innovation. I mean, you've got a maker space here. There are people building all sorts of stuff and gadgets and all of that. We are kind of more on the data sort of digital side of things. Okay. Public good is very important. That's maybe the overlap with what you see as social enterprises that are also doing similar things. The distinction with social enterprises would be where a lot of people in the civic tech are similar to the makers. They have a different idea of their business model, about how they want to do things, very value driven. So we've got an accountability framework that people will often say, look, these are the values that we use. Yeah. A lot of it is about intense civic engagement as well. So the solutions themselves that they're building might be about civic engagement, or the methods they're using may be very much based on crowdsourcing or using public data or empowering people with information. So the civic is very central, both in how the tech is created and why the tech is created. So we like to say it's definitely the civic before the tech, but there's a lot of exciting stuff that's happening on the tech side as well.
And on a practically speaking, how does that work working with the city of Johannesburg in terms of implementation, in terms of what projects you might choose? How does that ecosystem kind of work? And
Yeah. So the Civic Tech Innovation Network is actually Africa-wide, even though we are Johannesburg-based. But in part, it's not insignificant that we are here because there is obviously, Joburg's definitely one of the hotspots on the continent in terms of where civic tech is happening and has been growing. The city of Joburg, I think, has a number of touch points with the innovation space in general. And when they do things like the innovation challenges and that, I do think that they try as well to touch on the civic front. And you'll see that sometimes if you look at the past winners and that sort of thing, there's definitely a civic angle to it. You know, what are apps that, for example, are helping engage people in their mobility in the city and that sort of thing. Now, you may obviously still get some startups in that space that are not necessarily civic tech. Right. And that's a bit confusing for people sometimes because there are people who have for-profit models that are for good. And that's the social enterprise space. So we may not necessarily call that civic tech, but there is a blurry area there. So what a lot of people at Simolohong do, some of it we would think is civic tech, some of it is not. I think the city is very interested in how to have civic engagement, and participation is one of the very important issues for the city of Johannesburg. Tech is becoming one of the spaces that enables that. I don't think they yet have a clear policy or strategy about how they want to tap into it, but it was interesting. We launched a course, a short course in civic tech innovation about 2 years ago, supported by the Human Sciences Research Council, HSRC. And in our first cohort, I think almost half of them were people from the city of Johannesburg, different parts of it, the corruption unit, the innovation unit, the public participation unit. And so I think there definitely is an appeal that the idea of civic tech has for the city because of their own desire to have broader civic engagement. How it's going to happen, I mean, I think there's no formula yet.
Yeah.
But yes, it's definitely on their radar.
How would you see the city maybe comparing to other cities in Africa in terms of how they're thinking about implementation, in terms of how they're thinking about their problems? Are they looking at that from a digital perspective? You mentioned data. I mean, my issue with data is almost like, you know, how sovereign is that data? Who owns that data? Who collects that data? And, you know, that's maybe a different issue. But, you know, Joburg in general, how does it, is it comparable to other cities in Africa? Or where would you place it?
I think there are cities that perhaps are more focused on the issue. And just within South Africa, I would say that both eThekwini and Cape Town actually are a little bit ahead of Joburg in that they've created open data platforms. If you look at Durban Edge, if you look at Cape Town's open data platform, if you look at Cape Town's invitation, not just to academia, but to society in general to tap into that and use the data for whatever appropriate purpose. I think Joburg's on the radar. I mean, like I said, you know, they're there.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that I've seen yet that they are quite as systematic and committed to the ideas of open data and inviting people into that. Across the continent, we don't yet see enough. We see a lot on the civic side. So the demand side is huge. Is it the supply or the demand side? I'm not sure. But in terms of people wanting to do the innovation, I mean, we've got a whole community. We've got regional ambassadors actually now because there's that much going on. So Kenya is a hotspot, but our regional ambassador actually is in Uganda, which is also another area where there's a lot going on. In West Africa, I mean, Ghana and Nigeria are on fire. So we've got an ambassador in Nigeria, Tunisia, a lot going on in spite of very hostile government environments. But on the civic side, they're doing stuff. Central Africa is a bit quiet, although we always are aware that maybe we don't know what's going on because of language barriers. But we do have a node in Chad. And then in Southern Africa, in fact, the node is in Zimbabwe. So because we are here, so we didn't need a South African node. So Magamba Network in Zimbabwe is the node. And even in Zim, mainly around accountability and transparency and obviously governance issues. But even there's a lot going on. Now, in most of those places I've mentioned, in fact, specifically in those places I've mentioned, it's not because the governments are conducive or encouraging or supportive. Oh, no. Uganda is not a very open and democratic space from a civic tech perspective. Zimbabwe, hardly. Tunisia, hardly. So in fact, it's not because there is the willing and able and openness of the city government or the national government. It's because people are trying to get on with things and people have the ability through these tools to do things. So, yeah, so there's a distinction between whether the cities are doing a lot versus whether the people are doing a lot.
Okay, interesting. I mean, you've got a lot of, your background in urban planning and digital governance is quite extensive. I was wondering what role did this play in the success of those other countries versus South Africa? But it's interesting that did not even feature. It's just the Senate. It's the people.
It's the people. Interestingly, I think one of the relationships there, and it's not necessarily a good thing, and we've raised this in the civic tech space, is when we've tried to analyze the data to see, but what are people building the civic tech in? Like, what are the issues they're confronting? The last time we did the numbers, which was about a year ago, over 60% of what civic tech was focused on was what we called a category of democracy and governance. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot about watchdogging and transparency and corruption and all of this stuff. And we kind of took issue with that. I wrote a small article about that, just basically asking the question, you know, do we want to have, in a context where there's high poverty, high inequality, a lot of need, and then we spend 60% of our talent, of our effort, of our tech, doing what I called be-watcher-watchering. So now we pay tax, and then we pay people to, you know, a public service with hugely inflated public service wage bills, and then we also spend our time watching those people who we've just paid in multiple ways to see that they're doing what they should be doing. So I have a real problem that I think we are wasting our talent instead of delivering the things we actually need. Like, we need to improve our education systems. We need water. We don't have basic sanitation sorted out in Africa. And here we are watching our politicians to see that they're doing the right thing. There's something wrong with that mix. Right. So I think that disjuncture between the people and their ability to mobilize and the challenges of, you know, whether it's poor leadership or poor systems, I think it creates a huge inefficiency for us that we should be concerned about.
What would you consider to be, I mean, Africa is a big place, so there's lots of different things we could tackle from a civic tech perspective, but, you know, bringing home a little bit to Johannesburg, what would you suggest would be, you know, from your view, the starting points of what would be the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah. So I think, so I'll speculate here about some of the ones that I think, based on where I live, which is Johannesburg. So we've had a lot of people wanting to do, for example, pothole apps. The Joburgers will understand that, you know, and these things about, you know, just like, you know, whether it's water or potholes or whatever, but just reporting. I actually think that's not a bad place to start.
Yeah.
But the only problem with that is it might sometimes ignore the fact that the reason the pothole or the burst pipe isn't being fixed may not be just because somebody didn't know. It might be because it's not in the budget to do it, or there are issues with audit and people, you know, expenditure that's not planned for and people being afraid to do that, or just like maybe a lazy official, who knows why it doesn't happen. But it's not always because of a lack of awareness about monitoring the thing. In any case, there's such great tech for monitoring right now. I don't think we need to use citizen energy just monitoring.
Yeah.
I do think, however, there are more specific things we could be using similar tech to monitor that could actually be useful. So I live in a neighborhood where there are two public schools. We are semi-gated because of crime. I'm not a big fan of gating, and I just wonder, could we be using the tech, instead of just putting physical barriers to movement, could we be using the tech to have people talk about building community, for example? Because in a neighborhood like mine, I think the bigger security issue is we don't even know our neighbors, and we all have fences and gates, and we don't want to use the public park, and we don't want the nannies using the public park because people want to walk their dogs. I mean, there's a lot of, I think, just civic community building that I think we could do, and maybe the apps we're building could help build community rather than just reporting problems and trying to keep people out. I wonder if there are apps we could build that are about making better use of public space and creating more public space and ideas for how we could use that public space.
Yeah.
I often say that our governments behave like there's a problem of ideas, and that's why we do these challenges. And I say there's no problem of ideas. People have so many ideas. How do you process those ideas, and how do you really get them to connect with budgets and all of that? Actually, tech can help with that. So I feel as though they're very practical problems we could be dealing with. We've got issues around, like, I know recycling sounds like a very suburban white thing to do, but we know we've also got waste pickers and trolley pickers who are a big part of our waste system. Could we build community there? Could we build community around homelessness? Are there things we could do there that are more enabling than just trying to kick people out of space? So there are a lot of those kinds of, I mean, the real problems we see every day, and there are people who have ideas about. Could we use the tech to be doing that rather than just reporting problems to an entity that itself may not be able to do much. Maybe also building better community between the state and the citizen, which civic tech does claim to focus on, but it tends to focus on it in this reporting mode, like, okay, we'll tell you what's wrong so that you can fix it. But actually, Joburg is a city in crisis right now. We literally have no leadership. We've had, what, like 9 mayors in 7 years?
Yeah.
I was Googling it the other day. It actually gave me the wrong answer. Oh. Google can't keep up.
Imagine if Google can't keep up. Yeah, yeah. How are the people supposed to keep up?
There's such a story there in terms of what's actually happening with Johannesburg. I mean, it must be dysfunctional with just the current changeover administration. You can't be a functional city in that environment.
And we're supposed to be a world-class city. Yeah. Now there, I ask the question, are Joburgers okay with this? Like, where are Joburgers? Because when I go online, I don't see an outcry of people saying, but hang on, we voted in...
Yeah.
You know, we voted in various parties in various percent. We did not vote for this. This is not the mess that we banked. You know, people are being arrested for, you know, corruption. And then we've got councils that can't decide on anything. And we've got, I love that we've got movements like Josie My Josie who are trying to sort of fix up the city. But I kind of also have a problem with it only being a corporate movement because there's going to be a gap there between, So where's the civic side of that? And I don't see that yet. And that civic tech could actually be playing a role there. We could actually be seeing people mobilize and say, no, but we occupy the streets and these are the sorts of issues that we have. And then maybe, I mean, for me, it would be amazing if a Josie My Josie was actually able to collaborate with civic-based engagement and the tech could enable that. So I do feel like there's a lot of space to do things that feel much more relevant and much more urgent than in a way just in this space of finger-pointing and, you know, let's tell government.
Do we have the environment upon which successful tech, social entrepreneurs or civic tech innovators can create solutions that can scale and actually go to market? Because, I mean, one of the problems in the space, when you sit in front of a panel and you're pitching, the questions that they ask is scalability. What problem are you solving? Is there money to be made into this thing? And if you're addressing a lot of the civic problems, there isn't a lot of money to be made because the aim in the first place is not to make money, but to create an environment upon which people can commune and a service. So there isn't a lot of business there. And I'm wondering, how do we get... I mean, for example, there's a guy right here at the present, right?
Mm.
Who created a robot, and this robot can sort rubbish.
Oh, nice.
It can distinguish plastic from paper. It can sort, but where does he sell that?
Right.
These are things that will help the city. Joe Burgers, Prof. Getchi is putting us on blast. Respond with innovation.
Where are you, Joburg? Yes.
Let's go. Let's put products out in the market. But the problem becomes, how do we create and put products in market and scale and have this product sustainable without having to go to government and going, hey, Mr. Government, we're doing good work.
Yeah.
Do you mind throwing us a bone?
Yeah.
How do we create scalability and sustainability in this space?
I love this question, Stanley, for two reasons. Because there are two bits there that I'd like to comment on.
Yeah.
First of all, the concept and notion of scale, as has been used in the innovation space about the goal of innovation, is, you know, you do something and then you've got to be able to scale, you've got to be able to massify, you've got to be able to replicate. I have real concerns about whether we define that, I don't know whether it's broadly enough or narrowly enough. I actually made the case a week ago, I was speaking at World City, they'd asked me a question. The question went like this, if you were given $10 million and this was to create more resilient cities, what would you spend it on? And so I said, well, you know, it's kind of boring for me to answer that question because I have some fairly old answers to it. But I'd be happy to ask my network if you don't mind. So they allowed me to sort of put this question on my LinkedIn and just ask people, guys, what do we do with the bag, right? We've got the $10 million. What are we going to do? Within minutes, over 50 people had responded with very specific suggestions. So to my point that innovations are many. And what that led to, because of the range of the sorts of things people were saying, I was suggesting to this audience, is that I think that we think about scale as the product itself scaling and the market for that product scaling. and hopefully the income for the innovator scaling.
Yeah.
I think there's another way of thinking about scaling that's about the massification of different solutions and different products. So you could have one product that goes to 10 million, or you could have 10 million products that you've enabled. And in fact, that's a form of scale as well, because there's so many problems. Do we need one or two things that scale, or do we need many things that can gain enough traction? So I do think we need to rethink scale. Now, obviously, however, that links to the issue of the funding model.
Right.
I think there are two issues there. One is we possibly need some hybrid complex forms of understanding how funding could happen in this social enterprise space, because there is a lot of pressure for that innovator who develops that product to figure out sustainability. And we know many, many cases where it never does. However, in many of those cases, if you are really to ask, okay, who ought to fund this sort of thing? Now, you're talking about a robot that does waste sorting. You might ask in a system, a social system, in the society we have, in the social compact we have, who's responsible for that function?
Pick it up
is a public function. So I don't see why the state shouldn't pay. But I don't see why every innovator should be left to negotiate with the state about whether the state will pick up their solution. So I'm a very big proponent, for example, of first of all expanding the notion of what public employment should, because if you are doing work that the state is supposed to do, and we seem to understand that when it's filling holes or fixing roads or, you know, removing invasive species in rivers, we'll pay for that and call that public employment, but we won't call the person who developed a solution to waste sorting public employment, so they're not entitled to any funding from the state. I think we need to rethink that. I think there are a lot of functions the state is getting paid for that other innovators are developing solutions into, and we haven't figured out how to make. So I do think there are certain things the state should pay for.
Right.
I think there are other things society should pay for. And we can talk about, okay, what are those things? And then we've got this whole complex of whether it's philanthropy, foundations, corporate social responsibility that, in my view, does very many silly projects when they're actually really useful things that if you want to talk about corporate social responsibility, you could actually support. So I think that we've got to look at the sustainability of funding more holistically and hopefully eventually have less pressure on individual people having to sell their solutions than having an ecosystem that understands, okay, this fits into this and therefore that's appropriate funding.
Yeah.
And people need to survive. We can't have, you know, we're all watching The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, but we're like, if that's going to be the story of every African innovator, that you're just going to have to hack it and then still be poor at the end of it. And all you get out of it is a TED talk, you know. You know, that can't be how you're going to do things, right? So there is a lot about needing to innovate the funding and the financing in that space. I've suggested that the financing model for innovation itself has to change, because it keeps looking for these unicorns. It keeps pumping too much money into some products and not enough into others.
By the way, South Africa is yet to see a unicorn.
So what are we doing, right? What are we doing?
What role do you think spaces like, or institutions like Tsimulong play in the civic tech? I mean, especially around organizing funding and sustainability for such innovations. If we're going to have government buy-in, definitely we can expect that innovator to go out of their way, to go knocking on doors with government. They won't take them serious. I've been down that road. I know that it doesn't yield any fruit.
Get some battle scars there, hey?
Yeah. Traumas. Now, I'm asking, innovation hubs like Tsimulong, shouldn't they go out perhaps and find partnerships with the relevant government institutions and try to create an environment upon which the innovators can just work on innovating and somebody can be the enterprise arm of that which they're innovating? How would that look in the civic tech?
So, I mean, I guess, so first of all, just to emphasize that there is a slight distinction between obviously the kinds of entities that Tsimulong is dealing with, because many of those are startups with a for-profit model, and that makes a lot of sense. And we partner with Tsimulong because we see the overlap between its work and ours. I think ours is even more of a problem than than Tsimulong's, because, like I said, ours doesn't even start with a viable business model in the first place. But for Tsimulong, I think it's really important. I think incubators and hubs like these are very important because they create communities. They bring together people like you. I'm sure there are people you all have hooked up with while you've been here, and that building up the networks. Stuff. Exactly. Probably innovating. You didn't start off here as a podcast. Yeah.
You know where we started.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think they're very important for that community building, for actually building up the ideas, for killing some bad ideas, but then their ecosystem role, which is what you're referring to, I think is really, really important because it's both about making sure that the innovators themselves understand and are setting up having a viable business model. So obviously your businesses themselves have to be viable, but you've also got to prepare the ecosystem because we know our ecosystems are weak. Yeah. And I've been writing about this. We have really weak innovation ecosystems, especially at a local government level, since you're asking about Joburg. One of the things we've written about in a recent Mistra book is there's a big gap between our national innovation systems and the kinds of huge investments of South Africa we make at that level, and whether that articulates to what's actually happening on the ground at a local level. Most people don't even know we have a national innovation system. Like you, it's that removed from the reality of people. And that's a problem. Yeah. So I do think that bodies like Tsimolohong, like the Gauteng Innovation Hub, really do need to play a role, not just in incubating the startups, but also in preparing the ecosystems to be a little bit more enabling. And that includes the big issues that individuals can't focus on. So the access to markets, the building up the funding and the capital, we've got to address a lot of those issues. But the other side of it then obviously becomes civic tech, where the business models are a bit more complicated in the sense that they're not necessarily viable and they don't necessarily start off because there's a business model. They start off because there's a real issue that they want to address. And like I said, it's often value driven. There, I think we are, as a network, trying to have conversations about how that ecosystem building can be done. It's a slightly different, but although there's an overlap, and that's challenging, but it's also sometimes for us got to do with the mindset of these projects as well, because we sometimes have to say to people, okay, it's fine if you say you're not capitalist and you don't want a for-profit model. That's absolutely fine. However, if you want to sustain, you may want to put some thought to what your strategy actually is. Because what we've seen is if your strategy is that you're just going to be funded by whomever, by Luminate, or you're just going to be funded by the Hewlett Foundation, and that's 1 year funding or that's 2 year funding. We are currently running the African Union Civic Tech Fund, so 15 innovators across the continent have been funded. And 15,000 euros sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not. You eat through it in a year. For a small start, small civic tech body, and sometimes it's a guy in shorts kind of thing, or a gal in shorts. It sounds like a good boost, right? And you possibly could even build your tech with that, but you can't sustain with that. And so you've got to think ahead. And if you're not planning to sell your IP, or you're not planning to massive, scale and create multiple products, what's your plan? And so we're trying to get them to think more innovatively. We're trying to invite the ecosystem also to think quite innovatively around what are alternative models then for sustainability if it's not just a for-profit model. So there's a lot to think about there.
There's a lot.
So just an extension onto that response, maybe you can tell us a little more specifically about the Civic Tech Innovation Network and what's happening right here at the precinct next week, I think from the 28th to the 31st.
Yes.
Maybe tell us a little, I know it's been going for a few years, maybe just give us a bit of a wrap-up of what that is and what your intentions are around that event.
Right.
It's coming home.
It's here. Exactly. Next week. Next week. Yes. Party next week. We're here.
I didn't know.
You didn't know? Man. I thought you were my guy. So the Civic Tech Innovation Forum is kind of the annual convening of the Civic Tech Innovation Network. And that forum's been going since about 2018, I think was the first one we had. And I think the first one was actually here as well. So it's been going for a while. It went online for a while, but we've pretty much had it here in person. And we'd hoped to actually have multiple convenings at some stage because, it's not good enough to just meet once a year, but there's a huge cost and an effort to doing it. And we'd also wanted to move around, within South Africa, but also around the continent. Again, cost sometimes is an impediment. So there was some benefits to going online because it could be more inclusive. But there's still been a demand to keep on doing it. I think a lot of people feel they benefit from actually meeting each other. And every year, I think we've gotten more and more creative, both about the speakers we bring in, but also the innovators we exhibit and just give people awareness. We're also trying to create connectivity between different ecosystems actors. So we will next week have, as we did last year, there's a constituency from government, actually mainly local government, that comes through, some national government people as well, lots of civic tech innovators. They're probably mainly it. There's some academics who come through. There are people who are funders and investors in the space who come through to see what's happening. We have a party, which is just a social space to enjoy. But the main conference is a combination of workshops and panels where we just begin to have, you know, conversations. So this year's theme is Under the Hood, and it's a whole play on sort of literally under the hood. And we ask, what's under the hood, first of all, of... We've got hoodies. We've got hoodies. Come early. There's not enough hoodies for everybody, but we can afford them. I just told you we're not for profit. but literally, like, what's under the hood? You know, and we were playing with a stereotype of the hooded character, and that's usually some dangerous black male, right? And so when you see the hooded character, you want to, like, take off.
If you're a black man, don't put on a hoodie.
Exactly. Do not, you know, and if you're going to run, if anybody calls your name.
There you go.
So like, what's under that hoodie other than fear and, you know, the idea that somebody's out to get you? And often it's a lot of innovation and creativity and the ideas and the aspirations and the passion and the energy. So that's what we're calling under the hood of self. Mm. We're also asking, what's under the hood of communities? Many of us in this space are looking for funding or validation that comes from elsewhere, but we're like, what's within your communities themselves? That's a good question for Africa, for example, where we keep looking to Bill and Melinda Gates or whomever to fund us. I'm like, there's so many resources on this continent. What's in our neighborhoods and what can we use? What's in our communities? And the resources are not just money. It's, you know, so much more than that, right? So what resources do we have?
Yeah.
Then the third element, so it's self, it's community. The third element is what's under the hood of the frigging tech. you know, so the whole black box and all of us are concerned about AI and all of us are concerned about, are we just becoming a market for, you know, this emerging tech? We want to talk about tech all the time. But also, what are we really putting our data into? You're asking the question about the data sovereignty. There are lots of questions about what's happening there. So we want to have these three conversations together. We're going to have programming that's around the personal development. We've had our community say to us that, you know, the CEOs and the owners and the starters always have these cool retreats they go to and they get to, you know, zen out and come back feeling empowered. And, you know, but then actually a lot of the people who are actually doing the programming, the coding, the community work, you know, don't necessarily get that kind of validation and empowerment to really develop themselves because tech, at the end of the day, is done by people.
Right.
And so humanizing that and humanizing people. We've got a great team called Ubuntu Lab that are coming through from Zim. They do really innovative work that's African-based, sort of very kind of Afrocentric self-work. So there's going to be walks, there's going to be dreaming sessions, there's going to be, body work. So for those of you who need to get a bit in touch with your African selves, you know, and we think that's a big part of innovating. We think that, you know, innovating doesn't come from just the head.
Yeah.
It comes from feeling validated as a whole person. So what does that look like to feel validated from a cultural perspective, from a nature perspective, from a human perspective? So we're really glad to be able to get Ubuntu Lab out here and see what some of their methods are and what startups can, you know, as well. Yes, it should be really fun. So the tall room is going to be the self space throughout. Yeah. If you need to meditate or whatever, go there. There's going to be the community work. So we've got a lot of people who are in the civic space. This year, we have a great partner. We have a great set of partnerships, I would say, actually, with Civicus, with the International Civil Society Center, who are a global center. So people who actually are doing very active community building work. We're going to have conversations about that, about what's happening in the development space, the education space. So community work. And then the tech side as well. You know, we've got people from Mozilla Foundation coming through. We've got people who are building a lot of tech. We're going to have people in, you know, active in the AI space. So we think it's going to be exciting. 3 days full of conversations. The party, which I was just reminding you about, Stanley, we've got to hit the karaoke stage. We believe that...
I'm with you on stage this time.
Hey, you know, our talent may be very individually judged, but... but we want people to have fun, and that's what we're doing next week.
Interesting. You spoke about community and education. South Africa faces challenges with digital literacy, particularly amongst the disadvantaged communities. Are we going to see people from the financial literacy space to educate or try educate communities in that regard?
Yeah, so I mean, I hope among the participants we are going to see some of that. I mean, one of the things our network has been trying to do, for example, we put out what we called an explainer series this year. It was a series of just small videos, animations that just try to help build literacy. But a number of the actors we've got coming through really do focus on that. So Knowledge Foundation is coming through and they're trying to do work across the continent on that kind of work. We've got the panel we've got actually on education is going to be focused on ECD, on early childhood development. The person actually coordinating that panel is from the Oppenheimer Memorial Foundation, and they, or Trust rather, OMT, and they do quite a lot of work around ECD. And it's not just about building ECD, it's also about these questions of digital literacy and digital use from a very young age and understanding and making sense of that. So I think there are going to be a range of other actors like that who are in this space and who have some responsibility around the digital literacy, but it really is a huge issue. It really is a huge issue. We ignore it a lot, and then we have these... it's one of the things I'm glad we... AI has become such a big topic, but what I don't like about it is that it's become a topic that almost makes a whole lot of people feel like they can't participate in the conversation because they don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And that's a problem. It's a problem when you've got a society where you kind of have these asymmetries in information, but also sometimes we use the tech and the language to almost... exclude people.
Yeah, I think it's in the language. I mean, AI is in WhatsApp now, right?
And that's the problem, is that everybody's using it, so the fact that
you
don't...
aware, right?
Yeah.
It just reminded me.
And it creates vulnerabilities because you're not aware. And so I don't know how many people know what you could turn off on your phone, for example, not to be streaming, never mind wasting your data, but also sharing your information. Yeah. And the awareness is so poor. I don't know if you guys ever watched that Black Mirror series. Did you watch the one? You're a big Black Mirror fan. So one of the ones I really enjoyed was the one about Joan. So it was Joan is Awful. I think it's called Joan is Awful.
Yeah.
And it really was about somebody signing a contract with the equivalent of a Netflix. So it was called, what was it called? Like Streamberry or something like this. And not realizing that they'd signed the rights for the company to do anything with any of their information. And they basically created a reality series based on their actual life.
Yo.
Now, the point there was that when the lawyer printed the contract for the person of what she had signed off on, the contract this thick, and the woman was like, I've never seen that. I never signed off on that. She's like, yes, you did. And we do that every day on our devices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We sign off on 500 page.
Terms and conditions.
That's the thing.
Just consent and you move.
And so just even the awareness that that's a problem, some of us are becoming aware, but how many people have no clue? And everything that pops up, you just say yes, 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 because you're just trying to get
cookies
to the thing you're doing, right? Cookies, all of them. Just gonna. I even do that sometimes because I'm just sick of it. We've got to be more digitally aware. And I'm kind of a bit cynical sometimes because I do feel that we are being pushed to be so tech averse because we are worried about what's going to happen.
Right.
I'm like, look, we also need to develop, guys. So let's not block innovation by getting everybody scared, but we've got to have some basic awareness.
Your article that we published with Daily Maverick spoke greatly to this data extraction, but again, to whose benefit?
Exactly.
Companies come here to extract data, take that data offshore, they go offshore and create products, and then come back and sell you the same product that they created off of your own.
Exactly.
It's the same old story with the minerals. They mine the minerals, they take them offshore, create products, and they come back and they sell them to
you. Value extraction.
Right? So how long will this cycle keep going?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm going to stand back and go, it is what it is, or are we going to create products and equip ourselves with knowledge to understand at this point this has to stop?
Absolutely.
To my point of data sovereignty.
Yeah.
Right.
Like your you know, whether it's corporate, but you know, governments need to have particularly when it comes to AI implementation, your data sovereignty, each country needs to have some sort of policy framework.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not easy, unfortunately. But,
no. And we haven't
scary,
yet.
Yeah.
It is scary. So at the ISGOV conference 2 weeks ago that we held here in Tshwane, one of the big things that came up in that regard is that, okay, if we really want to talk about data sovereignty, let's first of all just start about where the data is.
Right.
So the fact that we have no African-owned data centers.
So
you don't even control the actual stuff, never mind where it's going and who owns it.
Do we even own the infrastructure? It's all
no,
the
exactly,
right?
exactly.
All
so there are a lot
of
issues.
The infrastructure is in telcos.
Absolutely.
The data centers are sitting with all private companies. Your email goes to America before it gets
comes
to the
here. Exactly.
Desk.
Absolutely. So the concern about all of that is something we ought to have. And so this is where maybe my role at the School of Governance becomes relevant. And I don't know if we're doing enough yet, but the idea is to ask those governance questions. So if we accept the truth, which is that these issues have outpaced our ability to even think about, so what do we do? Never mind finance it or technologically do it, but just even to think, what should a country do? Because
right.
you're not trying to also become a technological like island, right? And say that, okay, we're tapping out of everything. Mm. We understand that. But it's only now that we've got a national AI working group. It's only now that we're talking about digital public infrastructure. What do we do? It's only now that we're... So this stuff has outpaced the systems of governance, the understanding even of most officials who are responsible for these things. I think even our industry likes to act like they're on top of everything, but I'm not sure.
They're always catching up. They're playing catch up.
And it's not a South African problem. I think I'm told when I talk to our European partners that many countries, they have been in the same position.
A South African problem in the sense we always look to the global north, right? We never really sit and consider our context here and go, these are the problems we have and they need this approach.
Absolutely.
Especially the private sector. They go global north, this thing is working there, copy and paste,
it
will work here.
The copy and paste thing is a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It's a problem. No, the session at ICEGOV that the Nigerian government did, so they're NISTED, they're national, the equivalent of CETA, so they're state infrastructure agency. I was very impressed with them. They gave a really good session about how they're thinking about digital public infrastructure, understanding exactly where their national weaknesses are, and suggesting an African, a pan-African approach to how we could deal with some of these issues, because some of them are difficult also to deal with only at a national level because of some of the scale issues and the cost issues and all of that. I think we need to be having more conversations. So South Africa is going to be taking on the G20 presidency. Mm-hmm. I'm really keen to see what we do with that, because both India and Brazil, who are the previous chairs, managed to shift quite a number of things in the digital space while they had that presidency. This whole digital public infrastructure agenda, in fact, was driven by India in their last presidency. And they really pushed and they really got something on the table. I don't know if we can do that. Look, I'm not saying it was just India. I suspect there were some foreign influences as well.
Okay.
But I do think as Africa and as South Africa, you're absolutely right. I think we need to look local. I think we need to think about the problems we have. I'm currently working on a book called Solving the Problems We Have as opposed to Solving the Problems We Don't Have.
There you go. Stop looking global north.
Yeah.
Let's start right here.
Absolutely.
There was a, I don't know if you're familiar with the Singularity Summit, University Summit, popped in there earlier this week. There was a gentleman there, Dr. Mark Nasila, Chief Data and Analytics Officer at FNB Bank, and he was launching his book, African AI, which I told you about yesterday. It's a bit of a tome, but nevertheless, I saw his talk, and he was speaking about these issues with great enthusiasm. He was on top of it conceptually, but he understood, like, obviously it requires quite a large infrastructural change or thinking change in terms of how this is all going to work with not just in South Africa, but how we dealing with all these issues. And it's almost, my particular viewpoint would be like, wow, this is almost insurmountable, but it's going to take, it's not insurmountable, but it'll just take a lot of effort and a lot of different bodies working together.
I haven't read this book yet.
Regulatory framework. Is it responsive or is it reactive to all of this?
Does it exist? Let's start there. No, so I think we've got a bit of fragmentation there, and it's one of the things we're talking about. So Mark's actually on the national working group, so I'm really happy. I haven't read his tome yet. Actually, can somebody send me a copy? Mark, can you send me a copy? Maybe I should just buy one.
You should have actually just gotten it, because he was there. I'd like getting it signed.
Yeah, so definitely. So he's on the working group, and I am as well. And one of the issues there is the fragmentation and the need for greater collaboration, not just across actors, but even within government. So here's an example. The Department of Science and Innovation creates a national working group through its advisory council to say, okay, we need a national AI strategy, which many countries have been developing. Nigeria released theirs earlier this year. I think they're now maybe fewer than a dozen countries in Africa that have them. You know, the quality of them you can question, but so we need one. So that's fine. We need one.
We don't have one yet?
No. Mm-hmm. So while we are talking about it, what happens? DCDT, Communications, and releases a document also called the strategy, like earlier this year, just suddenly in the middle of the working group whose job it is to develop the strategy. And, you know, it's just so confusing. Like, how do these things happen? You know, so and it's just, you know, people being across purposes.
Yeah.
Like I just mentioned, now Home Affairs is starting a digital ID process, but Presidency is also talking about a digital ID process. So there's a lot of, I think, now
it's
everybody.
Like,
but you can imagine what happens when you're behind on something, and all of a sudden everybody wakes up to, oh my gosh, this AI thing. What does South Africa think? Now everybody thinks it's their job to figure it out, and everybody begins jumping into it.
That's almost as they are now responding to some way.
So very reactive. Very reactive.
Very reactive.
Fortunately, it's been picked up. And I think maybe because of these, you know, FUBUs happening, things are beginning to be like, okay, we can't be like this. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd like to think to some extent because of the ISGOV conference as well, because it forced some of these departments to speak to each other and to realize that, goodness, we really don't have our act together. So I think under the Presidency initiative, we're going to see some lines connecting now. To me, having the document called the AI strategy is less important than having a government approach to, because I've seen some of the strategies, they can be quite useless, actually. But we do need some coordination and we do need some strategic direction. We do need enabling policy frameworks, and I guess that's the beginning of it. But no, we're terribly far behind.
Sure. I mean, if we're still talking about strategies,
and
what are we talking about? Infrastructure? Are we talking about
and
frameworks?
It's,
I mean,
it's everything.
Creating strategies without creating frameworks, then what are we
and
doing?
It's everything. Look, on the academic side as well, I mean, so we've just launched, VITS has just launched the Mind Institute. So it's the Machine and Animal Intelligence Institute, which I think is going to be cool because it's also trying to harness some of the academic work. It's also behind.
As well,
Benji Rosman?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
No, like a computer dog.
Oh,
yeah, a little robot.
A robot, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so Prof. Rosman is the head of the Mind Institute. He's at Computer Science at VITS. So we actually work quite closely with them as well. And I think we need, because it's also, that's the other thing, it's a very interdisciplinary issue. So one of the things Benji and I talk a lot about is we want to collaborate because I think we understand that we've got a fantastic computer science department, probably one of the best on the continent. Their network through the deep learning in Dabbers is probably the strongest AI network on the continent. I think hundreds. I think the last time I heard you mention a number, it was like 700 plus PhD students, computer science geeks just like geeking out in the stuff. However, is that helping us in terms of the governance issues or even the industry issues?
Right.
Possibly not. You need to bring other sectors and other actors, even in academic space, to ask those questions. And that's what MIND is going to be, is this sort of interdisciplinary collaborative effort to understand. We need the cognitive psychologists to help us make sense of the mental stuff.
Yes.
We need the education people. We need the governance people. We need the medical people. We need, so like you just have to work across disciplines from a knowledge side so that we're providing more useful information. And then obviously government side, similarly, it's not just about having a technology department clued up, because often these issues touch every other department to the point just now about Home Affairs. Home Affairs, you don't think of as a technological department.
Right.
However, digital ID, which is squarely their mandate, is the foundation to almost everything else we need to do. And if we can't get that right, then you're kind of stuck. You know, we're all going to be lining up for driver's licenses still. We're all going to be signing 100 forms.
By the way, the printer's still not working. For licenses.
So, didn't somebody get a nice fat tender for that?
Probably. Can somebody give it to me?
You can solve that problem.
Hey, man.
You can bring a printer.
I'll create a digital license.
I'm kind of feeling like we could, you know, we could talk all day, and we're kind of teetering on the edge. We could just jump down the rabbit hole. So I don't know if unless you have any closing comments in terms of what to expect next week. I think we should maybe wrap it up and maybe save some conversations for a later date.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, be happy to take more conversations. Yeah. Really hoping that people do come out to the Civic. It's an open conference and we don't charge any fees because we are poor like that. we recognize poverty. but, you know, the idea is to create the space for the dialogue. And I hope there'll be lots of great conversations that happen there. And always glad to chat with you guys.
All right. So It's happening when?
So it's next week. It's 28th to the 31st of October here at Tsimolohong in Johannesburg.
41 Jutta Street.
That's right.
Braamfontein. That's where it's at.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
The Angle Podcast, and we are.